and Pickton with Borsa staying in to protect. Dumps it off to Borsa. Screen play to the 45-50 midfield. 50 of Calgary, 45 of Calgary to the 44. Kyle Borsa with a nifty play and a Ram first down.
Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in this province growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
This is Growing the Game with Ballsy, brought to you by Pizza Huts in Saskatchewan. David Dubé and the Concord Group of Companies, thanks to him for getting on board. Always a supporter of amateur football in this province. Also, Paul Waldo over at Royal LePage, an assistant coach with the U of S Huskies, a three-time Grey Cup champ. You want to get in the real estate game, give him a call, 306-502-5355. By Riviere Ag Seeds in Radville, Paul Riviere and his family, thanks to them for getting on board once again. By Mark Greshner Photography, check out his fine work at markgreshner.com. Also by SAS Selects Football out at the Yar Center, building the stars of tomorrow today with Zelko Stefanovic and the great group out there. Also want to thank Boys Next Door Window Cleaning. Nathan and Landon, check out their fabulous website at theboysnextdoor.ca. And of course, our buddy Corey Zadarozniak with Double Z Ag Sales out there in Weyburn. All right, I did an interview with Dave Thomas earlier today. And so talking about the CanWest quarterbacking situation and ranking the quarterbacks, and we kind of alluded to the fact that they were discussing age amnesty. Well, as soon as I stopped recording the interview, I find out from Farhan Lalji and others, some Ram players, that 25-year-old players, when they turn 25, they won't be able to play their last season of university football, which started a big explosion of texts and reaction on social media and outrage. So we're going to air the interview here of Dave Thomas. Then I'll get into the president and CEO of U Sports, Dick White, former athletic director of the University of Regina, get his thoughts on why they came up with this decision. But first let's roll that interview with Dave Thomas from CJWW in Saskatoon. Joining me now on Growing the Game with Ballsy is the intro voice to this podcast. He's also the morning voice on CJWW in Saskatoon, their program director, and he's also the voice of the U of S Huskies. He's basically Mr. Media in Saskatoon. It's Dave Thomas. How are you, Dave?
Mr. Media is on holidays, so it's just Dave for today.
Okay, just Dave for today. How many times do you get confused with the guy who used to run Wendy's, Dave Thomas, who is now dead?
You know what? There's a horrible story there that my mom once heard that he had died on the news. And she wasn't paying full attention or anything. And I'd actually been away on a ski trip with some buddies in the Rocky Mountains when he passed. So, it never gets confused, but it often gets brought up.
So she thought you died.
She thought that I had died.
Oh, wow. Did you get anything special when she found out you were alive? Like, did she give you a gift or something?
No, I'm pretty confident that she was happy that I was alive. But
pretty confident. Okay, so Dave Thomas, you're camping right now. What's your favorite thing about camping? Because I've always said this. Why would you work for 48 weeks of the year to live like you're homeless for 4 weeks of the year? I hate camping. What do you like about it? Because you do it all the time.
Oh, you know what? It's just the solitude. Just you can do what you want on your schedule, and you're dictated by the sun. Really, that's all that you do, whether you're going to go fishing one day or you're going to end up on the boat the next or whatever the case may be. So it's just the freedom.
Geez, somebody's paying somebody some money. He's got a camper and a boat. Wow, look at money bags there in Saskatoon. Maybe I should move to Saskatoon.
No.
Dave, so the Riders tweeted out this question. I know the NHL did the day before, but the Riders put a football spin on it. Who is the best amateur football player you've ever seen in person? For you, who is it?
Greg Newman, actually, a former Rider, of course, went over to the Blue Bombers for a little bit, but was a Saskatoon Hilltop before any of that. And he would practice with the Riders Monday to Friday, show up in Saskatoon Saturday, go over the game plan, and then play with the Hilltops on Sunday. And it wasn't just offense or defense. Like, again, he was a shutdown cornerback. They moved him to safety. But he actually also played receiver. Just he was that superior of an athlete. They had to get him the football. So they found ways to work him into the offensive scheme. So he'd play both ways.
Wow, interesting. I never knew that about Greg Newman, who definitely made an impact in the CFL and, of course, is a great Saskatoon Hilltop alum. How do you feel about university sports, even junior football, going forward? You saw here recently, Ohio State has put seven voluntary workouts for seven programs on hold because of COVID-19. Stanford cut 11 lesser-known programs like field hockey and such. And then, of course, we've got the Ivy League schools in the States putting all their fall sports on hold. And we say, well, those are just Ivy League schools. If you remember, they were the ones that got the ball rolling with the March Madness by saying they weren't going to participate in the regional tournament. So I'm very eager to see what's going to happen south of the border, mainly because I have a vested interest because my son's going down there. But how do you feel about the return to sports here when we get back to normal, and what will be left, what carnage will be left over when we're done here? Because you look at the U of A hockey program. For that program to get mothballed, everybody, as I said earlier in a podcast, should sit up and take notice. I really worry about the Alberta Golden Bears football team, to be honest with you, and depending how long this goes, Dave, the U of R Rams football team too.
Well, I don't think anybody's immune. And, you know what, I wish that I had a crystal ball and I could say that this is how we are going to come out of this. And I really don't understand I don't understand the economics. I don't understand the ramifications. And I don't have any theory as to how we are ever going to come out of this. But the one thing that maybe call me the eternal optimist coming out of this is that, number one, we're going to have an appreciation for what we did have. What we will have, I don't know what it's going to look like. But it's also an opportunity for us to get better, right? So now we can understand that, okay, for example, you start at the top of the Canadian Football League. How important is it to have those Canadians on that roster and be relevant to Canadians? So maybe there's an opportunity for you to rework that. Maybe there's an opportunity for the Canadian Football League to find its funding footing with help from government, which, again, cannot be a full-time solution, but maybe it's an opportunity then that trickles down to the college level or the junior level, and an opportunity to reinvent, right, where actually a quarterback gets a shot in the Canadian Football League, right? So it's an opportunity for that to reinvent itself. And so you've got a great grassroots program that I think that Saskatoon Minor Football, Regina Minor Football, and community football associations around the province of Saskatchewan are putting on the field and developing players, whether it just be recreational or as an elite athlete. And then the next step is that you've got that funding in place, whether that's a junior football program that also leads to a university program or vice versa. But it's an opportunity, I think, to hit the reset button. Reset, reinvent, find out what works, find out what hasn't been working, and figure a way to come out of this even better and stronger than what you were.
Dave Thomas, you've always been a strong voice, and I really like those comments because I've been banging the drum down here in southern Saskatchewan about that very thing for a long time, and let's put the C back in the CFL, C back in Canadian football at all levels. I really believe that, and I'm glad you're echoing those sentiments. So I'm going to get you over, because we're looking for sports here, especially on this podcast, and it's about football. I'm going to get you over a series of days helping me out with this. So let's go with the rankings of the CanWest quarterbacks. We'll call it the Gunslinger of the old CanWest. You know, it used to be the Gunslingers of the old Wild Wild West, the Gunslingers of the CanWest. So let's rank the quarterbacks 6-1 in reverse order. So what do you got for number 6? And before we get to that, I should mention this. I want to give a honorable mention to Sawyer Bittner of the Rams and Seb Britton. The Rams might have the best trio of quarterbacks in the conference. Unfortunately, we won't play this year, but Seb Britton and Sawyer Bittner get two honorable mentions for me before we get going. Okay, Dave, number 6.
Well, the criteria that I used in ranking the quarterbacks is, if I was to take the field next week, who do I want behind center for me playing Canada West football that still has some eligibility? So I'm not looking next year, 2 years from now. I'm talking about next week. And number 6 would be Tommy Yanchuk out of UBC. I really thought Gabe Olivares was going to run away with that program, but Tommy Yanchuk came in, won it away from him, didn't have a ton of success. But again, sometimes you have to get punched in the face before you get up and you go all the way to the championship tilt. So Tommy Yanchuk, number 6.
There you go. Okay, at number 5, who do you got?
Regina Rams, Josh Donnelly. Now, Josh is a fantastic athlete. and didn't have the support of Kyle Borsa in 2019. If he does, he has a lot more success, I feel personally. Now, this kid has got all kinds of upside, but right now he's in a situation where he's still a young guy and still learning the ins and outs of Canada West. So number five, but only temporary, for Josh Donnelly.
Okay, at number four, who do you got?
Brad Lonnard of Alberta. And again, this one was where I was flipping back and forth between Josh Donnelly and Brad Lonnard, because Brad was able to elevate the program last year. He did good things with the University of Alberta, and he found a way to lead that team when a lot of people really had left them for dead. So Brad Lonnard moves to number four on my list.
By the way, I'm going to give my rankings after we're done with Dave. Right now, we differ a little bit, but this is why I brought you on. I love a different perspective. The voice of the U of S Huskies joining us here, Dave Thomas. At number three, now I should preface this, because Calgary's quarterback Josiah Joseph is a guy that, depending on how the rules go, he could be back next year, or he might not be, depending on age amnesty, however they decide that, because technically he'll age out after this year.
Exactly, and that's what I had to think about with my list, right? If I'm making my list for today, because Brad Lonnard is also going to be one of those guys that he'll be fifth-year eligible, but would age out and would not be able to play in 2021 under the current format. So that's why at number three, I went with Des Cattelier from Manitoba.
Mm-hmm.
Cattelier, he showed me all kinds of courage, guts, fortitude back in 2018 when he played a football game where he never should have been on the football field, and he almost pulled off a victory for his team at Griffith Stadium against the Huskies. So Des Cattelier, with his heart and soul and his smarts, I put him at number three. And then the guy you brought up, Josiah Joseph, I put at number two. Again, let's face it, quarterbacks in Calgary, Buckley, Sinagra, now is it Joseph's turn? And he showed that he could come on in relief of Adam Sinagra in last year's Hardy Cup final and was terrific. Can he do it over the course of a season? I'm not sure, but that's why I put him at number two.
That's very interesting, Dave, because Calgary is a thing where you got to wait your turn. You're behind Adam Sinagra. We've seen Joseph in small spurts like you just alluded to, and he looks like he's going to have a bright future for the 1 year that he's going to be there if he can play going forward. But you know, that's the thing. You wait around forever. Like, look at Jimmy Underdahl back in the day. Finally gets his chance and wrecks his knee. I mean, it's a program as a quarterback that you got to bide your time. But you're right. It's a system thing where you expect them to be good. So very good call there. And the number one quarterback, the only guy you haven't mentioned here, let's talk about Mason Nyes, because I've been this kid's agent since he's been in grade 10. I really think this kid throws the ball better than a lot of backup quarterbacks in the CFL.
You know what? He has an amazing delivery. And you look at the work that he puts in, and maybe just to tell you about the delivery for a half a second, receivers for the Saskatchewan Huskies, what they'll do when Mason isn't throwing the ball or maybe they're injured or whatever, what they will do is they'll bring out, you know, that punting machine that they've got?
The jugs machine.
Yep, they bring that out and they put her up full speed just so that they can go ahead from 15 yards out to catch a Mason Nyes pass. It's that tight of spiral. It has got all kinds of you-know-what on it, and they're able to handle it, and that's what they have to do to train. And he can go ahead and he can literally thread a needle.
Yeah, no, you know the one thing, I've said this about Mason since he was throwing the ball in the park with my son back in the day, way back in the day when he was in grade 12 and my kid was just in grade 8. Mason's first pass looks like his last pass, whether he's throwing 5 balls or 100 balls. Do you agree when you're watching it from the booth?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Every time that he throws the football, it's got that you know what on it, and it's bang on. And the thing is that he's got the confidence to throw that, right? He's not going to be shied away from, oh, that last pass didn't go where I wanted, or it was tipped at the line, or geez, why did the receiver slip, or what happened? Maybe it was intercepted. He will come back and he will throw the next pass, and that's confidence in addition to his physical gift is what I think sets him apart in a lot of different ways.
And he throws without the laces, something he learned from Stefan Ensign back in the day. Just don't find the laces, get it and throw it, and he's done it to some great success. So that's another interesting quirk about Mason. Hey, you were talking about putting the C back in the CFL. I haven't got your comment on this, because we talk about Calgary. Sinagra signed as a free agent in Montreal, which is a good thing. I'm glad Danny Machocha, who's a big Canadian quarterback, quarterback guy, is a GM in Montreal and recognizes Sinagra. But how doesn't Sinagra warrant even a late round pick? And then I look at a guy like Nias. He's probably going to be, if a quarterback is drafted, he'll be the guy drafted next year coming up here. But I mean, come on. Can we not give these guys a legitimate crack to make a roster? I've said this a million times. Imagine a Nias on a Saskatchewan Rough Riders football team. What that would do for the community of football in Saskatchewan.
Well, number one, absolutely. With talking with me about Mason, the thing that, again, you can't see if you're not a scout, right? The scouts can obviously see and identify the physical talent. They can review his demeanor when he's in the huddle and on the field, but they can't see the work, the preparation, the mental fortitude that he's got to put that all into place. But to get back to your question, does Brandon Bridge step on the football field if he's not Canadian as a quarterback? In all honesty and sincerity. Now, it wasn't a long career, probably didn't last the way that it should have. But what would be the problem with mandating, okay, so right now you don't even have three quarterbacks on a roster. What would be the problem with mandating a third Canadian quarterback right there? What would be the problem with mandating a Canadian at every position? Doesn't have to be a starter. You have to still fill in the holes with the starters that you've got, but why not? Like, what's that going to harm?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Like, I don't know if there's enough quarterbacks to put them on the put everybody on a roster. But I do think you've seen a Hugo Richard, you see an Adam Sinagra, you get a Mason Ice, maybe a Josh Donnelly going forward. Heck, I'm talking about quarterbacks. Noah Pickton. What about having a developmental spot like they used to? Why not bring these guys along a couple? You know, maybe they need a couple of years because they're not used to throwing against SEC or Pac-12 cornerbacks. Those kind of guys, or you know, the big 10 guys, but give them a couple of years to develop. What's the harm in it? I mean, how many Nice jerseys or Donnelly jerseys or Picton jerseys would you sell in Saskatchewan? I can guarantee you wouldn't sell. You've never sold third string jerseys like that before. We got to be thinking forward. And I agree with you, Dave. If we want Canadian dollars from the Canadian government for the Canadian Football League, there's a common theme there, Dave. Canadian, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I would even argue, I think you can find nine quarterbacks in Canada to fill a third quarterback spot. Whether they get into a game or not, that is the organization's decision. But look at what we've been graced with in Canada West, right? From Andrew Buckley to Michael O'Connor, look at the Pictons. You know, the list goes on and on. And that's just Canada West. We're not talking all of Canada right now. And if you have to go ahead and make it mandatory, then all of a sudden the teams have got to spend some resources on developing that talent. They don't want to be the ones with their pants around their ankles. So all of a sudden, hey, guess what? They're going to bring two, three, four guys into training camp to give them that opportunity to train with the big team at spring training, right? Like, you see what it does when Mason Nias goes into sitting in a room with Bo Levi Mitchell. The confidence, the things that he learns in just a week or 2 weeks is incredible. Mm-hmm. So allow opportunities like that for quarterbacks and even other position players. What does it hurt? I don't see the downside on this. And you then are technically forcing those teams to spend their development money on bringing in Canadian kids and give them a shot. Who knows?
I know one thing. If it was the United States, they'd be protecting their own for sure. We always compare ourselves against the United States, right or wrong. If it was the United States, they would be protecting their own. And that's what we need to do, promote and protect our own, especially when we're going up against a juggernaut like the United States. Okay, to wrap up, Dave, it's going to be interesting to see. We don't have a crystal ball, but how things go forward, because this Husky team was built to win over these next 2 years. I really believe they'd challenge Calgary this year and have an opportunity to win over these next 2 years. But now a wrench is thrown into it. How many guys come back? How many guys get a degree and want to come back? I think you guys had six guys that were about to age out too, if I'm not mistaken. So how many of those guys want to stick around? It's going to be very interesting times ahead.
Oh, you're right. Absolutely. And these aren't just football decisions anymore. They're life decisions, right? Like, you've got some guys that are ready to move on with their lives, right? They've got their degree. They've done the education. They want to go ahead. They want to start making money. A lot of them, you know, have got relationships outside of football. Are they going to get married? Are they not going to get married? Like, how long can they put their lives on hold for football? Now, don't get me wrong. Most of them are going to say in a heartbeat, I'm back and I'm playing no matter what. But I'm really, really hoping, for the sakes of some of those guys that have the possibility of aging out, one being Colton Klassen, right? There's heart and soul player right there.
Mm-hmm.
if he ages out, that you know what, he's going to play until they tell him he can't play anymore. So whether he's playing in the CFL or wherever, he will play until somebody physically takes his pads away and says, "Ah, you know what, it's time that you're done." Mm-hmm. And I truly hope that somehow, some way, people can go ahead and figure out a way, and this is going to be way smarter than me because it impacts not only the fifth year and the guys that are going to age out, but the two recruiting classes that are going to be involved. So hopefully somebody way smarter than me can figure out a way to say, okay, listen, we owe it to these kids to fulfill our commitment to allowing them to play for 5 years. That's what they planned their life out to. Nobody planned for COVID. So, again, if they plan to play some junior football and then get into university when they were more mature academically, we can't fault them for that, and I'm just hoping that some smarter heads, way smarter than mine, will be able to figure a way to make that happen.
Tell you what, we talked about the Alouettes. Machocha got the two steals of the draft. Andrew Becker, lineman from the Rams, who teams kind of let slide down the board because of a concussion history, which is warranted, but he's a very talented offensive lineman that I could see having a long career if his if his head holds up over the next few years. And Colton Clawson, he might be the steal of the draft. When you look up football player in the dictionary, you see guys like Neil Hughes, Jason Claremont, and Colton Clawson. He's not the biggest guy. He's not the fastest guy. He's not a specialist per se, but he does everything well.
And you know what? I really like that narrative you put there with Neil Hughes and Colton Clawson, because, you know, very, very similar players, both, of course, locally bred. But Neil had that horrific leg injury back at Griffith Stadium. Clawson, the same thing. They overcame the injury, not only physically, but also mentally. And, boy, is there a big parallel there. Boy, you hit the nail on the head there, Baldy.
All right, Dave, last question for you. It's a fun one. You can only roast one thing over a campfire. Is it a s'more or is it a wiener?
Oh, man, it's got to be. I'm a hot dog guy.
Yeah.
Like all the time, hot dogs. Yeah.
Best condiment for a hot dog, ketchup, mustard, or relish?
Ooh, I'm a ketchup guy.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a ketchup guy. Mustard's like the Hartford Whalers of condiments, right? Like, it's like if you got to have it, you got to have it. But, like, come on, right?
Yeah, the Hartford Whalers, yeah.
Anyway, Dave, have a great time at the lake, my friend. Thanks for this. Next week, you're picking the top five receivers in the Can West.
Oh, boy.
Okay? Do some homework. Okay. Do some homework on the boat, since you can't catch any fish. You're like me. The fish do a good job of social distancing from us, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm good at wetting hooks. That's what it's all about.
See you, brother. Well, I love the work that Dave Thomas does with the Huskies broadcast. Thanks to him for weighing in on his Canada West quarterbacks and the old gunslingers of the Can West. Now, I told you that Sawyer Bittner and Seb Britton are honorable mentions before I get to my list. At number six, I had Tommy Yanchuk and Gabe Olivares as kind of 6A and 6B because they split quarterbacking duties with the UBC Thunderbirds, so they get number six. At number five, I've got Brad Lonhart. The 6 foot, 215-pound Golden Bears quarterback was one of the few quarterbacks to stay healthy last year, and that helped him put up numbers to earn him the top quarterback in the Can West. He is a pretty good quarterback, but didn't show as good when going head-to-head with the best quarterbacks in the Can West. So he comes in at number five. At number four, just because he hasn't built up the resume yet, it's Josh Donnelly. Ask me in a year, and he might be up at number two. The 6'3", 170-pound Regina Ram out of La Boldest is the youngest quarterback in this top six, and he is definitely, like I alluded to, a rising star. The one thing I didn't know about him, he is crafty. He can make plays up on the fly. I remember he's getting sacked. He throws a pass over his head, a no-look pass like you'd see in basketball to a running back or a slot back, just like 5 or 6 yards upfield. Definitely fun to watch, and he's going to continue to move up this list as he gets stronger. That's the one thing. Got to build up that shoulder strength because he's had some injuries there, and he's a little bit thin yet, but once he grows into his body, look out. At number three, I'm going with Josiah Joseph. He's the oldest quarterback on the list, along with Lonhart, and he's becoming the starter in Calgary after sitting on the bench for a long time. Of course, he was stuck behind Adam Sinagra and has played well in a limited role. Expecting a strong season for him. He's got 6'3", 205 pounds to put to his resume, so he's a nice size. And like I said, he showed pretty well when he got a chance to come in and do some things, especially in the playoffs when Sinagra was hurt. But I want to see a the full body of work from Josiah Joseph. Definitely patient because he's waited on the bench a while. At number two, it's Dez Cattelier, the 6'3", 200-pound Manitoba Bison, attended training camp with the Riders and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and was a CFL top prospect in 2019. Great all-around quarterback, as you heard Dave Thomas say, very tough guy. You know what? If he's on fire, so are the Bisons. If he's off, so are the Bisons. And that's generally the sign of the straw that stirs the drink, and he'd be that for the Bisons. And the number one quarterback, no shocker, because I've been pumping his tires since grade 10, Mason Nias, out of Regina, former Riffle Royal, the Saskatchewan Husky, is definitely the premier passer in the Can West, if not the country. He's 6'1", 205 pounds. If he was 6'4", there'd be NCAA schools beating down his door. He's got a rocket of an arm, really accurate and really smart. You can have a strong arm but not be very accurate, as we saw with guys like Brandon Bridge, even Seb Britton to an extent. He's a guy that can throw the ball a mile, but can he hit the target? Mason Nias can do it, and like I said earlier, he throws without the laces. Catch and throw, catch and throw. He attended camp with the Stampeders and the Riders and was selected for the CFL Top Prospect game this spring that was postponed. If a quarterback is picked in the 2021 CFL Draft, it's probably going to be Mason Nias, but that's a big, big if, unfortunately. So that's my list of the top gunslingers in the old Can West. By the way, I had posed the question to Dave Thomas about his top amateur football player that he's ever seen. I have two on my list. Number one would be my old high school and Rams teammate, Mike Rutten. This guy wore the rec specs like me, wore number 33, and he could run the daylight. I remember a playoff game against Luther. We put him in at quarterback. He runs an end-around quarterback keeper 109 yards at Old Taylor Field for a touchdown. And with the Rams, an explosive player too. The problem is, I joke with him, he had glass ankles. Spent more time in the tub than on the field, and that's what we see with a lot of great players. Injuries derailed him in this tough sport of football, but he was a lightning rod in the backfield for the old McGuigan Mustangs and the Regina Rams. Kick returner, too. And the other player that I saw, and I've seen a lot of them covering Ram games, it's got to be Jason Claremont. What he did in that 2000 Vanier Cup run was outstanding. What he did in the Canadian Bowl in Okanagan there in Kelowna when he brought the team back from the dead there in the 90s, definitely 1A and 1B. I put Claremont 1A and Mike Rutten 1B for me as the best amateur football players I have ever laid my eyes on in person. But there's lots of great ones, man. Byron Davy Duke from the Leboldus Golden Suns. How about Kennedy Nikiasen from the Tom Trojans? Atlee Simon's been good. Neil Hughes. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. Brent Schneider, Dan Farthing. I mean, you could make your own list. It's a good talking point for sure. This is Growing the Game with Ballsy, and we're talking with a friend of the podcast, Dick White, former athletic director over at the University of Regina, the president and, interim president and CEO of U Sports. Dick, a lot of outraged older football players today. They're not too happy that if they're going to be a 25-year-old player on the other side of this pandemic, they'll age out. Can you fill us in your words, what led to this decision? Because as I understand from Farhan Lalji, and that's where I'm getting some of my information from, coaches unanimously wanted to have a one-year exemption, but it was deemed ahead, above them that wouldn't be the case. What led to this decision?
Well, I'll answer a couple of things first, and I honestly do feel horrible for the student athletes that this has affected. And it just seems like every day that goes by, COVID affects something else in our life that isn't very good. We get a canceled season, and I understand for these student athletes that it's a devastating decision. Let's clear up a couple of things. The group, the football technical, the sport technical committee, which is not entirely of coaches, has athletic directors involved in it as well. Yes, they did want an exception to this rule. What they do is at any level in football is provide recommendations to either the U Sports sport committee or the board of directors or eligibility. They do not have final authority over what happens on the football field. We do take seriously what they say, especially when it's of the technical on the field of play. In this case, this was an issue that was dealing with eligibility, which does go to the board of directors. So the board of directors of U-Sport made this decision, and a good deal of the decision, no, I would say what turned the decision was a memorandum, a legal memorandum that we sought out. We delayed this decision a week from the original board meeting and sought legal opinion. We got a 13-page legal opinion on what would the impact be, what risk is there to youth sports, to the universities, to the programs, if we were to look at a variety of accommodations for these athletes. What we were told in that legal opinion was that if we were to make an exception to the rule, the risk that we ran was that the rule itself could be abandoned as not being valid in itself. That if we can make an exception to the rule to allow these players to play, then next year there may be no rule, because someone else could contend that if the age limit of 25 or under 25, depending on how you want to look at it, is not valid for reasons of health and safety and being able to move people through the system and have a younger cohort come into the system as some people go out. If it's not valid in this situation, then it may not be valid in any situation. The rule could be challenged and gone entirely. So we looked at it, the board ultimately made the decision. I was myself and some other staff members were involved with the board as well in working our way through this. After 10 years, it's basically been 10 years that we've had an age cap of some sort. We started out with a rule that was 5 and 7. I think you might remember that, Paul.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
You had 5 years of eligibility to complete in 7 years out of high school. That created all sorts of grief depending on where guys finished high school and how it ended. And like, it was difficult to administer. And so eventually we got to a straight age cap. And I say we, you know, I wasn't around at the time, but that's okay. So they got to an age cap, and it has not been challenged at all in the 10 years that we've been in. There have been a few appeals with athletes that lost their final year because they aged out because of injury. Those appeals were not accepted. So the rule has been challenged in that regard. Given that it was something that it was quite clear was very important to the football schools to have the age cap, we did not want to run the risk of losing it. So the ruling came down in the way it did.
So, Dick, let me stop you here, because
it's a tough one.
Dick, I get it. And you've always been an advocate of athletes. I know from our time dealing with each other when you were the athletic director. So when I initially called you to tape this interview, you said it's not my best day. So, I mean, I'm not trying to put you over the coals, but I'm talking as an advocate for these athletes that my phone's been buzzing off the hook since this thing happened. So let me ask you this, because I get this, and I'm all for the age cap, because when I first was calling Ram games, Manitoba would roll a team in here. They were famous for rolling a team in here. They'd have a 31-year-old wide receiver with three kids playing against a 19-year-old defensive back.
Yeah.
Or their running back, their starting running back in the 2007 Vanier Cup was 29 years old. So, I mean, you got to have some credibility behind it. And so I get the age cap. And I get maybe what you're saying about the legalese, and I'm not a lawyer. But this has never happened in our lifetime and may never happen again. And we talk a lot about mental health of athletes and the mental health. And by gosh, here in Regina alone since last September, we've had 4 or 5 kids commit suicide. The reasons behind it, I don't know. But where I'm going with this is, Everybody's under duress. You are, they are, everybody is. Can we not look at this and say, listen, we know that this could open up a can of worms, but we also know that this is something that's never happened again before and hopefully never happens again. Can we make an exception just this one time? Like, how deep did this conversation go? Because there's a lot of kids out here like, come on, man, I should be able to play one more season.
Well, I don't disagree with you, Ballsy. I really don't. This is an exceptional situation. But the reasons behind having the age cap have not changed. Mm-hmm. And the reasons were to create a cohort of sort of 18 or 19-year-olds and 25 to play against each other. The reasons were to make sure that we created opportunities for young people coming out of high school or a year or two of junior, that they had an opportunity to make a roster because there weren't older guys on the roster. So those reasons have not changed. And that was very closely examined by the board. That has not changed. 25 was picked as a number. Should there have been an exception over COVID, one can make that case, and I do understand that case. The risk was probably not with these athletes playing in the next year. The risk was the rule being challenged entirely and now changing what university football looks like in the next 10 years compared to the past 10. I do understand, you know what, we might have made the exception and it might have gone along just fine, and the next year we just slip back and move forward. But really, you got to move forward 5 years, because if these fifth-year guys are going to challenge, then probably so are the fourths and thirds and everybody that was there last year will want one more year. So we've fundamentally changed football for the next 5 years if we change it. Mm-hmm. You know what? Maybe it's okay, but there was a reason, as I say, that we had this cap for those years and they haven't changed. That was the thinking of the board. I was probably personally more on the side of making an accommodation, at least for the fifth-year guys.
Yep.
After I saw the legal opinion, as an organization, and not just a fan of the game, as an organization of what we were putting at risk, I had to say that the board was moving in the right direction with what they did. But we knew. I said when we left the board of directors call, I said, guys are going to get killed on this, and it's a really hard one. It's a really hard
one.
Well,
Dick, I'm sure you're aware, Dick, that you're not you know very well. You come from the passion of the prairies here. This thing isn't going away. I think you know you're still gonna. You might end up doing some legal stuff before this is all said and done. I'm sure there'll be a few challenges, and I'm sure you're aware of that.
And you know what, Ballsy? I actually am okay with that. Like, I really think the challenges are the rights of the university. The appeals are the rights of the athletes. Challenges are good because either they will affirm at another level, another committee, another court, whatever it may be, that the right decision was made, or if it's overturned, then you know I'm glad it had a second look. I'm mm-hmm. glad it had a second look. So mm-hmm. that's fine. I don't, you know what? I don't take these things personally. It's I work with a board of directors. They made a decision. I advised them. We got the legal opinion. We ended up where we were, and they were, in spite of what anyone may think, they were very thoughtful in their decision, and they understood fully that this was going to be very hard. Very hard for some athletes and was going to be a difficult decision. They felt, given the legal advice that they had and the risk management requirement of any board, that they were making a decision that in the long term would be good for university football. I understand the debate, and I respect the people that disagree with that.
You know, Dick, I really appreciate your candor and you talking here. I guess lastly, it must be hard, or how hard is it for you to separate Dick White, interim president, CEO, having to be the stoic, I guess, for lack of a better way of putting it, the stoic, for lack of a better way of putting it, logical guy to sit back and look at the legal opinion and that type of stuff, or you know, separate that from being Dick White, the guy from the prairies, from Regina, athletic director, dealt with athletes at the ground level. I get that that has to be a slippery slope.
Well, you know, it's still there. When I say, just because the end result didn't go the direction, when I say I feel horrible for those athletes, and when I say I feel horrible and I relate with the coaches and their emotion behind this, I am very sincere about that. I also understand clearly what my role as interim CEO of a national organization with 15,000 athletes across the country, sorry, not 15,000 football players, but 15,000 athletes, what my role needs to be. And you know what? I imparted some of that emotion to make sure the board is aware. When I said to you that I told the board we were going to get killed on this one, I said the same words. I didn't just say them to you. I said that to the board. I said, we are going to have a really tough go on this one. And, I said we've got to continue to reflect on the decision and make sure it's a good one and be prepared to be challenged. Not just in the media and not just with probably some tweets that aren't particularly accurate, but challenged in a legitimate fashion. So I don't know if that answers your question. Yeah. Don't worry, the passion's still there. And if I lose the passion, I probably shouldn't do the CEO job because I really do care.
Okay,
those and I care about those. I care about those, but I also care a lot about the new ones that create an opportunity to come into university football. I care about those guys on the other end of this decision as well.
Yeah, no,
we've opened spots.
Yeah, that makes sense, and it's a juggling act. You, for lack of a better way of putting it, you're kind of sacrificing the older guys, and the newer guys are coming in. But I just want to I want to let you have the last word here because this is what I get. I talked to Robbie Lowe's, who's one of the Ram guys. I've talked to a few Husky guys. They feel like the upper echelon people don't really, you know, in the boardrooms and the ivory towers, however they want to perceive it, they feel like those type of people don't care about them. They don't really care about the athlete. They don't really, you know, I look at a guy like Josiah Joseph, quarterback of the Calgary Dinos. He's going into his fifth year. He's never had a chance to start because in that Calgary program, you got to be patient, right? Jimmy Underdahl a few years ago blows his knee after waiting for all those years to play. Now Josiah Joseph, he shows in spurts he can be the guy. Now he's going to be the guy for the defending champs, and now he doesn't get a chance to play. So last word to you on just that, just a message to the athletes who think you don't care or the U Sports don't care about them.
Ballsy, I know all the people that you're talking of. I know the people on the board. I know the athletic directors. I still know most of the athletic directors across the country. They care deeply. This decision was made for caring for 3,000 football players, not just 300. And it was a tough, hard decision, and it was one that may well impact the future of university football, not just the present. So it's a harsh, blunt decision without question, but it's not out of lack of caring. It's having a different perspective than an athlete that unfortunately has lost their opportunity to play next year. It's a different perspective.
Dick, I don't envy the job you have to do, but I respect it. Thanks for taking time talking to me today.
Anytime, Ballsy, you know that.
This has been Growing the Game with Ballsy. If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. Ballsy can be heard weekdays in Regina on 104.9 The Wolf Morning Show and during Saskatchewan Roughriders and U of R Rams broadcasts on 620 CKRM.